Does the maschil naya sukkah? The Gemara quoted a brisa that the naya sukkah are not memait the sukkah. So Tosis quotes Rashi as to what that means. Kramim haprusim lamala lenoi. If you have decorative sheets that are spread out on top for decoration, ein mematim besukkah gavoha michof lachshira. Does not lessen the total height of a sukkah that's higher than 20 amos to kosherize it to make it a sukkah whose schach is lower than 20 amos. Rashi explains why. The lav min schachahu, since it's not considered a form of schach. It's noi. We had learned earlier on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph that if you have schach that's higher than 20 amos, and the hutzin, the leaves, go below 20 amos, if those are tzilsum rumichamsa, more shade than sun, that it is a mite, because that's a min schach. The hutzin, the leaves, are a form of schach. But the decorative sheets are not a form of schach, they're decorations. So since they're not a form of schach, they don't have the ability to lower the height of the sukkah halachically from above 20 amos to less than 20 amos. Rashi proves his point that noi is not considered a form of schach. The ischacha havi, have a mipsul, mishum de makabel. If it would be considered a form of schach, then it would disqualify the sukkah because it's susceptible to tumah. Rashi is lishitaso on the Yud Amud Aleph, that any time you put out pasul schach underneath or on top of kosher schach, since that's a form of sikuch, if you put it out to block the sun, not to hold the leaves from falling, so that's meant lahagin, to protect, and therefore it's a form of pasul schach, and therefore it disqualifies. And Rashi doesn't hold it as far that Tosis raised on Yud Amud Aleph, that we say dal mihacha, that as long as you have tzilsum ruv mechamsa of the regular schach, so you remove the conceptually the addition. So it's curious that Tosis quotes this Rashi without discussion here, since he argues on that Rashi in Yud Amud Aleph. But either way, it's not Tosis' main point here. The main point we're going to get to in a moment is addition to Rashi. Rashi again tells us that it proves to you that it can't be considered a form of schach to lessen the height from 20 amos, because if it would be a form of schach, then it would be a form of pasul schach and would disqualify the sukkah under all circumstances, even if it's lower than 20 amos. And the whole point of the braisa was to tell us that noi does not disqualify the sukkah. So now Rashi adds a point which Tosis is going to elaborate on. Lav leposla mishem pechusa miyud. And not to disqualify it for a sukkah that is less than 10 tefachim. Meaning, if you have a sukkah that's 10 tefachim tall, which is the minimum kosher shear, or higher, but the noi, the decorations, lower the total height from the floor till the bottom of the decorations to being less than 10 tefachim. So you might think that that's disqualified because the minimum height of a sukkah has to be 10 tefachim. So here Rashi tells us that just like the decorations do not kosherize the sukkah from being a height of higher than 20 amos to being a height of lower than 20 amos, they also don't disqualify the sukkah from being a height of 10 tefachim or taller to making it less than 10 tefachim. Kach pirish b'kuntres. So Rashi explains, again, this whole presentation was a quote from Rashi. So now Tosis has an implicit kasha. The same Gemara that we referenced earlier on Dalet Amud Aleph that says that if you have hutzin that lessen the total height from above 20 amos to less than 20 amos, provided the hutzin at tzilsum ruv mechamsa, it will kosherize the sukkah. So the Gemara there said that if you have hutzin that go below 10 tefachim, even if they're chamsa meruba mitzilsa, even if there's more sun than shade, so you might think you could totally disregard them, which indeed was a bias svara. But then Rava countered that no, that that's possible regardless if you have hutzin going below 10 tefachim, mishum diras rucha. Because it's repugnant, a repulsive kind of dira to sit in a sukkah like that where your head's going to bang into the leaves. The Tosis is implicitly asking, so isn't it also a problem because your head is now going to bang into the noi, into the decorations? The Tosis answers, Dishani hacha, dilanoi asuyin. Since here it's different because they're made for decorative purposes, so it's not considered a diras rucha. Somewhat unclear what the svara is, because just as presumably the hutzin are considered a diras rucha, not because they're malodorous. That's a separate discussion about schach that has a bad odor that, you know, at least me the rabbanan, you're not supposed to have a sukkah like that because you might leave the sukkah even if the measurements are all in accordance with the halacha. So lechora diras rucha here means that it's too cramped. Your head's going to bang into them. So why don't we say that the head's going to bang into the noi? So perhaps Tosis is saying something psychological. When you have things that are for beauty, So people don't mind the fact that they're banging into them. I didn't really see the poskim discuss exactly the reason why this is true, but Rashi states the halacha that it doesn't lessen the height of 10 tefachim. Tosis explains it. Others use the formulation that noi is batel. It's nullified to the sukkah. And even though the Gemara says we don't say that with respect to the width of the sukkah, that if you have decorations that lessen the size from 7 by 7 tefachim to less than 7 by 7 tefachim, there the Gemara says it's possible. And we don't say that svara that somehow it's like secondary to the sukkah. So somewhat sarchian as to what the svara is, why it's okay. Nonetheless, this psak of Rashi is recorded by the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, and all the poskim. Taizdei maskil shluchim mitzvah anan. The Gemara had recorded a machlokas between Rav Nachman on the one hand, who holds that noi sukkah could be at whatever height below the schach, and Rav Chisda and Rav Bar Avuna disagree, and they say that it has to be within four tefachim of the schach, otherwise it's possible. So the Gemara records the story that Rav Nachman, who was related to the Reish Galusa, he was the son-in-law of the exilarch. And as the Gemara has elsewhere too, the Rabbanan used to visit the Reish Galusa for on Sukkis. It's a gathering of Torah there called Kala, meeting of all the Tamir Chachamim and of other people to come hear words of Torah. So Rav Nachman had Rav Chista and Rav Bar Avuna sleep in his sukkah, and Rav Nachman Lashitoso had decorations which were lower than four tefachim. And he saw that these rabbis didn't object. So that's what he told them. Did you back out of your shita and now you hold like me? And then they said, no, we are potter from sukkah because we are shluchei mitzvah, because we have traveled away from our homes in order to be at this gathering at the Reish Galusa's house. So Tosis just points out something he primarily discusses in the second parak on the Chof Hei Amar Aleph, shluchei mitzvah anan. In the words of Tosis, l'chugon shoyu mizbatlim en ha-mitzvos imhoyu mechazrin achar sukkah acheres. This is talking about a case where they would not be able to do the mitzvah that they came to do, namely Bakala, to go to the Shiurei Torah and to visit the Reish Galusa, and Moye Mechazir Nachar Sukkah Cheres, if they would seek out another sukkah. Presumably the case is that they had to have a good night's sleep in order to be up for the day's events, and if they would seek out another sukkah, the end of Nachman's, that didn't have the schach below four tefachim, that it would cause them to lose sleep and they wouldn't be well rested enough in order to fulfill the mitzvah properly. Tosis is Lishitosam on Chafei Amar Aleph, who develops the idea that just as someone who's wearing tefillin is not exempt from mitzvos, the Gemara discussed the idea of Osek mitzvah, Potem and mitzvah. When you're involved in one mitzvah, you're exempt from other mitzvos. And Shluchei mitzvah, who are exempt from the sukkah, are exempt for a similar reason. Osek mitzvah, Potem and mitzvah, since they're involved in one mitzvah, they're exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Tosis notes that it cannot be that if it's Efshel Akayim Shneim, that if you could do both mitzvos, that you're potter. If that would be true, that if you're wearing tefillin, you should be potter from all mitzvos. So therefore, Tosis develops that yesod, that principle, that you're only exempt from other mitzvos if there's some kind of conflict, that it's Efshel Akayim Shneim. While you're involved in one mitzvah, you cannot do the other mitzvah. The Tosis has a kasha from a Gemara similar to this one. The Gemara on Chafei Amar Aleph quotes a different story about Rav Chista and Rabba Bar Avuna, that they slept on the banks of the river. So that must have been a different year or a different night. And the claim why they're exempt from sukkah is because they were shluchei mitzvah. So Tosis asks over there, as he is implicitly asking over here, why couldn't they go to a sukkah and sleep? Efshel Akayim Shneim, they could fulfill both mitzvahs. They could sleep inside a sukkah, and they could also do the mitzvah of learning and visiting the Reish Galusa the next day. So Tosis' answer is, that we're talking about a case where if they would seek out a sukkah, they wouldn't get a good night's sleep. It would be too much effort. So that's what he says over here as well. That is talking about a case where if they sought out another sukkah, they would be mevatel from the other mitzvah. This is in direct contradistinction to the view of the Ran, that since the Gemara didn't really qualify, so there is no such principle. And therefore, osek mitzvah patan mitzvah patar, even when it's efshel akayim shneim, even when you can fulfill both. Therefore, he would have a broader understanding of this, that the fact that Rav Chista and Rav Bar Avuna were shluchei mitzvah, they would be potter from the mitzvah of sleeping in the sukkah under any circumstances, even if they wouldn't be mevatel themselves in the mitzvah by seeking out a kosher sukkah, according to their view. How the Ran gets out of the kasha from tefillin as to why someone wearing tefillin, very briefly, is because the Ran distinguishes between an osek and a mekayim. There's someone who's involved in a mitzvah, and there's someone who's just in a passive state of being in the fulfillment of a mitzvah, like wearing tefillin. Apparently, the Ran holds that the rest period of someone who is involved in a mitzvah is also called part of the esek, part of the involvement of the mitzvah. Tais divimaschil levad shaloyun aklitin gvoyim en amita asara. This is somewhat of a more involved Tosfos. So let us briefly review the Gemara with some virtual charting out to help understand the words of the Tosfos. The Gemara distinguishes between three, or possibly four, situations of some kind of tent-like structure that's inside the sukkah. One is called kinofos, one is called naklitin, and the third is called the kila. So, without getting involved in the exact etymology of these words, but the way the Gemara presents it is as follows. Kinofos is a case of something that has a significant width, a minimum of a tefach, but typically it would be the width of the bed, because there were four poles on each side of the bed supporting this canopy-like structure. Naklitin is a case where there are two poles on either side of the bed in the middle, so therefore we're dealing with a situation that's more like what we would call a tent, where there are two diagonals that come to the point on top, like a triangular shape, and there is no tefach on top. And then there's a kila with a kuf, which seems to subdivide into two subcategories. There's a kila which is similar to kinofos, that has a width on top of at least a tefach, that spans the bed. And the difference between that and the kinofos is, whereas the canopy of the kinofos is attached to the bed, because there are four poles on all the corners of the bed supporting it. The kila, by contrast, is apparently set up on the ground, and then you put the bed inside. So it's like putting a bed inside a tent. The base is on the ground rather than on the bed. So that, in the standard case of a kila, is wide on top, at least a tefach. So in that sense, it's similar to kinofos. And then there's a second category of kilas chasanim, which is more similar to the naklitin, where it has two diagonals on the side leading to a tip. But again, the difference being that the naklitin is supported by poles that are attached to the bed, and the kilas chasanim is supported by poles that are attached to the ground, and then the bed is stuck in underneath. So in terms of the halachis, so the Gemara presents as follows. The Mishnah said that one who sleeps inside a kinofes, or inside kinofos, is not yotze the mitzvah sukkah, because he's sleeping under an ohel, which is separate from the schach. So it's somewhat similar to the psula sukkah tachas sukkah. You can't be under an ohel, which in turn is under the sukkah. And the Gemara recorded a braisa, both here on the Daf Yudam Beis, and it repeats it again on the Daf Yudam Lefamid Aleph. And one can infer from the braisa that it doesn't matter how high that kinofes is, even if it's less than 10 tefachim, the fact that it's at least a tefach wide disqualifies the one who sleeps under it from being yotze the mitzvah. So again, a kinofes, since it's tefach wide, is always possible. Concerning the naklitin, so here the braisa is clear that this, again, naklitin that does not have a tefach wide on top, it's pointy on top. So there, if it's higher than 10 tefachim, so one who sleeps in it is not yotze the mitzvah sukkah. And if it's lower than 10 tefachim, so one who sleeps in it is yotze the mitzvah sukkah. And in terms of kila, so here we have two different versions of Rav Yehuda HaMashmua. One version is on Yudam Beis, and that states that a kila that has at least a tefach wide, so unlike a kinofes, that's always going to be possible regardless of how high it is, but with a kila, if it's higher than 10 tefachim, then one who sleeps in it will not be yotze the mitzvah, causes a psul. And if it's lower than 10 tefachim, then one who sleeps in it is yotze the mitzvah. The first version of Yehuda Shmuel discusses the case of a kila that is at least a tefach wide. This version does not directly address a kila's chasanim, or a kila that does not have a tefach wide on top, but it comes to a point that doesn't comment on it at all. This silence, as we shall see, in one understanding of Tosfos, might imply that when it comes to a kila's chasanim, the same distinction of whether it's higher than 10 tefachim or lower than 10 tefachim might apply, that if it's higher than 10 tefachim, it's possible, and if it's lower than 10 tefachim, only then is it kosher. The second version of Yehuda HaMashmuel, quoted on Yud Aleph and Aleph, speaks about a kilas chasanim, which is not a tefach wide, but comes to a point on top, similar to the naklitin. And there, according to this version of Yehuda HaMashmuel, the second version, concerning a kilas chasanim, it's kosher regardless of its height, that even if it's above 10 tefachim, one may still sleep in it and be yotzei the mitzvah of sukkah. This second version of Rav Yehuda HaMashmuel does not comment on the regular kila that has a tefach wide, and it doesn't state whether or not it's possible only when it's above 10 tefachim and kosher when it's below 10 tefachim. The silence concerning that might imply that it is always possible. This is something that Tos is going to discuss and then show that that can't be. Again, the two different versions talk about two different types of kilos. The first version talks about a regular kilo, that it has a width of 10 tefachim, of one tefach at least on top. And the second version discusses a kilos chasanim that does not have a tefach on top.
The first version makes a distinction within a regular kilo that has a tefach wide, that above 10 tefachim is pasul, and below 10 tefachim is kosher. And the second version only talks about the kilos chasanim that doesn't have a tefach on top and comes to a point that it's kosher regardless of its height, whether it's below or even above 10 tefachim.
So Notosis has two basic points. One to point out, at least concerning some of these halachas, whether they're min haTorah, min derabanan. And the second, which is really brought up somewhat tangentially, is to explore whether the two versions of Yehuda and Shmuel are complementary, and each one is just saying its own unique halacha, but they're not arguing, or they're actually arguing with each other. So here's part one of Tosis. Min hadin afilu gevoen yud shari. That min hadin, as we're going to see from the continuation of Tosis here, he means min haTorah. Even something that's higher than 10 tefachim, again, the Divya Maschil is naklitin. Even naklitin, which are higher than 10 tefachim, are mutter. Mutter to sleep in such a naklitin, and you will be yotzei the mitzvah. The lo chashivi ohel, it's not considered a tent, lahafsik, to divide between the one who eats or sleeps in it and the schach on top. Why? Kevin de'ein begago tefach. Since it doesn't have a tefach up top, halachically the definition of an ohel, let's say with respect to the laws of Tumah, is at least a tefach. And therefore, min haTorah, it doesn't really matter what the height of the naklitin is. To elaborate a bit, just like the second version of Yehuda Mishmuel said that Akilas Chasanim, which is higher than 10 tefachim tall, you could still be yotzei the mitzvah of sukkah inside of it, because not considered an ohel. So Tosis maintained that on a Torah level, the same halacha would be true for Naklitin. Even though, as we mentioned in our introduction, the Braisa states explicitly that Naklitin, which is higher than 10 tefachim, you will not be yotzei the mitzvah. So Tosis maintained that that is a rabbinic stringency. But min haTorah, it would have the same halacha as Akilas Chasanim according to the second version of Yehuda Mishmuel. Tosis proves his point. The Habashili Pirkin, since at the end of the first Perek and the few Testament Beis, Maskinon, we conclude, the Chain Halacha, Sukkah Asuya Kemin Srif, that the halacha is that a sukkah that is made, sometimes they translate it like a teepee, or we have two walls that are leaning toward each other. Presumably you'd need three walls to have three walls for the sukkah. So rather than the typical more cubical shape of a sukkah, but you have the walls leaning toward each other, so on top it comes to a point. So there's a machlokes etanoyim in the Mishnah. Our version has the Chachamim kosherizing it, and Rabbi Eliezer saying it's pasul. Then the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yosef that he had a different version of what the Tanoim hold, and therefore we have the Chachamim saying it's pasul and Rabbi Eliezer saying it's kosher. So he passes like the Chachamim, according to that version, that if it's made like Kevin Sri, if it's psula, that it's pasul. Why is it pasul? Why can't it be considered both walls and schach at the same time, assuming the walls are made out of kosher schach? That's the case that the Mishnah is talking about. Normally you have walls that go up straight, then the schach at a right angle on top of it. So you have distinct walls and schach. So why can't you have a combination walls and schach if it's made from kosher material? So the Gemara explains, Lefi she'ein lo gag, since it doesn't have a roof, the shipuye olim lav ka'olim, since the leaning parts of the tent, not the flat roof part of a tent, are not considered like a tent. Again, we speak about a lot of tents that actually do have leaning, but sometimes you have tents that have a straight part, and then on top of that you have some kind of roof, even if the roof is somewhat at an angle. But there's a clear demarcation between the walls and the roof part. But if all you have is a tent that has slanty parts, so that halachically, according to the winning view of the Chachamim, against Rabbi Eliezer, shipui olim lavka olim, that the leaning parts of the walls of the ohel are not considered like a tent, meaning they're not considered like the roof, they're only walls. So if there are only walls, so you don't have a gag of the sukkah, you don't have schach. If you don't have schach, you have a pasul sukkah. So Gemara elaborates further there. Uminoa diek Rav Yosef. From that halacha of the Mishnah, that the sukkah that's made like a tzrif with just leaning walls, that's pasul. So Rav Yosef was medayek a kula from that. And the Gemara there. The mutter lishon bekilas chasanim besukkah, that you're actually allowed to sleep in such a structure, regardless of what material it's made out of. If that's under a regular kosher sukkah that has regular walls and regular schach, and you're sleeping in a kilas chasanim under that, and that's exactly what Rav Yosef did. The Gemara records that Abaye saw his Rebbe Rav Yosef sleep in such a structure, and the discussion that ensued after that was because Rav Yosef says, it's the same as the Mishnah. If the Mishnah disqualifies a sukkah that's made that way, so that we hold that walls that are leaning are not considered like a rooftop, are not considered like an ohel structure. So the same is true lakula, that if you're sleeping inside a sukkah with walls that are leaning out of cloth, it doesn't have to be kosher schach. So that's not considered an ohel, it's not considered a separate tent, and therefore it's as if it's not there, and you're not underneath a separate ohel, you're considered as being directly under the schach. So Tosis is diuk, is that the Gemara there doesn't distinguish between whether the Kilas Chasanim that Rav Yosef was sleeping in was higher than 10 Tfachim or lower than 10 Tfachim. It just states, unequivocally, Shipuye Olim Lavka Olim, that when you have leaning walls, they're not considered like a rooftop, they're not considered like an ohel, not considered like a gag. Therefore, it's kosher. The Tos is asking implicitly, but here our Gemara quotes a brisa that naklitin, which are similar to that, even though it's somewhat different, because naklitin are dealing with, we have pieces of wood that are attached to the bed that support that tent-like structure. And kilas chasanim is where it's supported by things that are attached to the ground, and then the bed or the table, whatever is inside. But the brisa states explicitly that in the case of naklitin, which is made in a tent-like structure that where there's no tefach on top, that's possible if it's above 10 tefachim, and it's only kosher if it's below 10 tefachim. So how could Rav Yosef kosherize the kila, whether it's above or below? So Tosis is answering implicitly that minat Torah, it's all kosher. The kila's chasanim is kosher whether it's above 10 tefachim or below 10 tefachim. And then akleitin would be kosher whether it's above 10 tefachim or below 10 tefachim, because the same swara would apply, the same logic of the fact that it's shipui olim, you have no distinct rooftop, no distinct ohel on top or gag on top. And it's only midrabanan that were machmir by naklitin when it's above 10 tefachim. But that chumah derabanan does not apply to kilas chasanim, which is explicitly stated as well by our Gemara on the Yud Aleph Amud Aleph by the second lashon of Yehuda and Shmuel, that by kilas chasanim halacha lemaisa, even midrabanan, it's totally kosher to sleep underneath it, even if it's above 10 tefachim. And it's only by naklitin that we ban it to rabanan, as Tosis now says explicitly, v'hada asrin and hacha concerning naklitin, gevo and asara, when it's higher than 10 tefachim, hainu midrabanan. That's rabbinic, a rabbinic stringency. V'davka ben naklitin. Now Tosis explains why the distinction between naklitin and kilas chasanim. V'davka ben naklitin dekvi, because those are more firmly fixed, because the two beams of wood, as we said, are attached to the bed, and therefore it has more of a permanence to it. Avol kilas chasanim, which as we mentioned, are attached to the ground, so that's more flimsy. The low kvi, it's not so firmly fixed. Afilu gavoh yud sharia, and therefore even if they're higher than 10 tefachim, it's permissible. Now Tosis gives a parallel to this, and then we'll try to summarize it with something that will give us a nice rule to put all these rather complex, detailed halachas together. Ki heichi dechmiru bikinofos lesser afilu ein gavon yud, just as they were machmir concerning the first example of kinofos, again to recall, a kinofos has at least a tefach wide, and it's placed on four poles that are attached to the four corners of the bed. That's asur to sleep in afilu ein gavon yud, even if it's not taller than 10 tefachim. Why the chumra there? Since it will make it in other cases where it's below 10 tefachim, with the kila and the kilas chasanim and the naklitin, with everything we make if it's under 10 tefachim. Why are we suddenly machmir when it comes to kinofos? Mishum de kvi, because the kinofos is more permanent and more fixed. With kilas chasanim, by contrast, the lo kvi, shari, afilu b'yesh lagag. So here Tosis refers to Achilles chasanim that is not so permanent and it's permissible to sleep under it, even if it has a roof of a tefach. I was medayik from Rashi that Rashi seems to hold that a kila always implies where it has more than a tefach. Kilas chasanim is where it comes to a point. Tosis seems to use the terminology interchangeably, and he just spells out whether it has a tefach wide or not a tefach wide. So here Tosis uses the terminology of kilas chasanim, which are not permanent. It's more than a tefach wide, and it's still kosher. This is what I quoted earlier, is the first Lashon of Yehuda and Shmuel, quoted on Yudam Beis, that when it comes to a kinofos, regardless of whether it's higher than 10 tefachim or less than 10 tefachim, you cannot sleep in it. But when it comes to a kila, even if it has a gag of at least a tefach, it is permissible to sleep in it if it's under 10 tefachim, but prohibited to sleep in it if it's above 10 tefachim. And the reason for the distinction, again, is because kinofos is more kavua, and therefore it is more chomor, it is more stringent, and it's aser, whether it's above 10 tefachim or even if it's below 10 tefachim. And the kila, or what Tosis calls the kilas chasanim, that even if it has a tefach wide, it's only a problem if it is above 10 tefachim, because it is not kavua, it is not permanent. Tosis further verifies this idea that the fact that it's kavua makes it worse. Just like the Gemara says more explicitly with respect to something that's more similar to an aklitin. In the other version, on Yud Aleph Mer Aleph of Yehuda Meshmuel, the naklitin legabe kila kvi'i, that naklitin is considered somewhat more permanent than akila. To spell it a little better, akila is considered the most flimsy, naklitin is somewhat more permanent, and akinofes is somewhat more permanent. So now Tosis is quoting that Rav Yehuda Meshmuel on Yud Aleph Mer Aleph stated that with respect to naklitin, the Braisa teaches us that if it's above 10 tefachim, you cannot sleep in it, in the sukkah. If it's below 10 tefachim, you can. But concerning akila, or akila's chasanim, even if it's above 10 tefachim, as long as it doesn't have a gag on top, it is perfectly okay to sleep in it. Why the distinction? So there the Gemara explained, because naklitin is more kavua, it's more permanent than the kila. On the other hand, the naklitin is somewhat less permanent than the kinofes. How so? Because the kinofes, we are being machmir over the fact that it's kavua, that it's more permanent, even if it's below 10 tefachim. And with an naklitin, we're mekel if it's below 10 tefachim, and only machmir if it's above 10 tefachim. To put it all together again, and to review again what we said in the introduction. Concerning a kinofes that is at least a tefach wide, it is possible regardless of its height. Concerning that klitin, it depends whether it's above 10 tefachim or below 10 tefachim. If it's above, you cannot sleep in it. If it's below, you can sleep in it. And the same is true for a kila that is a tefach wide. That if it's above 10 tefachim, you're not allowed to sleep in it. If it's below 10 tefachim, you are allowed to sleep in it, according to the first lashon of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel. Concerning Akilas Chasanim, which doesn't have a tefach wide on top, there that's mutter, regardless of its height, whether it's above 10 tefachim or below, it's still mutter to sleep in it. So what Tosis is basically saying here, that on a Torah level, anything slanty, whether it's naklitin or Akilas Chasanim, you'd be able to sleep in it regardless of its height. The reason that rabbinically, when machmer for naklitin, if it's higher than 10 tefachim, because it's somewhat more similar to an ohel because of its permanence. And Tosis shows how permanence is a factor where we are more machmir. He shows that in terms of kinofes, that because kinofes is permanent, so there we're machmir, even if it's below 10 tefachim, as opposed to akila, where the fact that it's not permanent allows us to be lenient if it's below 10 tefachim and only to be machmir above 10 tefachim. Those who further prove their point from the very distinction the Gemara gives on Yud Aleph Amar Aleph, according to the second Lashon of Yehuda Meshmuel, that the reason why we're machmir for naklitin when they're above 10 tefachim is precisely because it's more kavua than the kilos chasanim, even though they're very similar, neither of them have a tefach, but with the kilos chasanim we're makel even above 10 tefachim, and with the naklitin we're not makel above 10 tefachim because it's more kavua. So Tosa says that that's the reason why midrabanan they were machmir by naklitin, even though minatora shipuy olim is not kolim, and slanty walls slash roofs are not considered the rooftops, and it all should be kosher minatora. The simplest reading of this Tosfos is that all of these things are all chumras midrabanan, even though there are debates about this in the Achronim, and Tosfos only directly comments on Aklitin, but that the simplest reading would be as follows. Min haTorah, we would need three factors in order to be considered ohel-like. Number one, we would need permanence, kviut. Number two, we would need width, at least a tefach wide. And number three, we would need height, at least 10 tefachim tall. Similar to what Shmuel says concerning sleeping under a bed, that it needs to be at least 10 tefachim in order for that to be considered sleeping under a separate ohel in the sukkah. Again, it's not the only way to present the Tosfos, but just for simplicity's sake, it's the easiest way to present it. The Mishnah Berurah quotes concerning some of these dinim from the Prima Godim, specifically concerning the kinofos, that even under 10 tefachim, it very well might be min haTorah. But for simplicity's sake, we're going to assume that all of these dinim are the Rabbanan, and Lanias Daiti, that perhaps is the simplest reading of Tosfos. Min haTorah, we need three factors to be an ohel. Permanence, kvius, a width of at least a tefach, and height of at least 10 tefachim. What we have is that, again, simply speaking rabbinically, some of these things actually might be in the Torah, according to some poskim, that if you have two out of the three, so then we're machmir midrabanan, that it's considered sufficiently similar to an ohel. And if you only have one out of the three, then we're makel totally. Let's just see how that spelled itself out. So with a permanent structure, let's say a kinofes, attached to the bed, 10 tefachim tall, 1 tefach wide. So certainly that would be pasul to sleep under, and bepshuto, that would certainly be a problem in HaTorah. If you have a kinofes that's a tefach wide, and less than 10 tefachim tall. So there the Gemara says you're not allowed to sleep in that. Why? Because it has two factors, what the Paiskim call tarti l'reisa. It's two negative factors going for it. It's kavua, and it is at least a tefach wide. The fact that it's less than 10 tefachim tall, and in that regard it's not so similar to ohel, is insufficient to permit sleeping in it. Then let's give a different example of where we have a different tarti l'reisa, two factors going for it, where it's banned midrabbanan. Naklitin that's taller than 10 tefachim. So on the one hand, we have the fact that it has no tefach on top. So that's the tivusa. That is a factor positive going for it, that it shouldn't be considered like an oil. But on the other hand, it is somewhat permanent. As we pointed out, naklitin is considered more permanent than a kila, even though it's somewhat less permanent than kinoifes. And it's higher than 10 tefachim. So we have two factors going for it to compare it to an ohel. Kviut, permanence, and the fact that it's higher than 10 tefachim. So there the fact that it's less than a tefach wide is not going to save the day, and at least rabbinically, it is going to be asur. Now let's analyze this in terms of kilas chasanim, or what we called earlier in the name of Rashi, a regular kila. A kila that's at least a tefach wide, and it's higher than 10 tefachim.
This is mentioned by the first version of Rav Yehuda and Mishmuel.
So we pointed out that a kila is not permanent at all. But you still have two negative factors. It's higher than 10 tefachim. And it's a tefach wide. So again, you have a tartel reisa, two negative things going for it, and therefore, at least me the Rabbanan. And Tosus doesn't spell out that factor, that's the Rabbanan, but b'pshuto, it's only the Rabbanan, that it's a aser to sleep in such a sukkah. Now let's see examples where it's totally mutter. But if you have a kila that is a tefach wide, and it's under 10 tefachim, so then you only have one negative factor going for it, the fact that it's a tefach wide. But it's less than 10 tefachim, so that's a positive factor to make it not like an oil. And it's not permanent, so that's a positive factor to make it not like an oil. That's what we call tartu tivusa. It's only charal reyesa, only one negative factor. So that we have in the first lashon of Yehuda Mishmuel, is totally acceptable to sleep in such an oil. Then we have naklitin, which are under 10 tefachim. So unlike the kila we just discussed, which is at least a tefach wide, an aklitin are not a tefach wide. On the other hand, an aklitin are more kavua. So there you have a negative factor that it's kavua. On the other hand, you have two positive factors, that it's not like an ohel because it doesn't have a tefach wide on top, and it's also not like an ohel because it's less than 10 tefachim. So that the Braisa states explicitly that an aklitin under 10 tefachim may be slept in. And finally, we have kilas chasanim,
mentioned by the second lashon of Rav Yehuda Mishmuel,
which even if it's higher than 10 tefachim, so the fact that it's higher than 10 tefachim is a negative factor, that's more like an ohel, but it has two positive factors going for it. Number one, that it's not permanent, it's not kavu at all. And number two, that it doesn't have a gag of a tefach. So it might sound confusing, but pretty straightforward that in order to be usher, you have to have at least two negative factors, which you select from the subgroup of kvius, width of a tefach, and a height of your tefachim. And again, to summarize, Taisus only directly states that the two negative factors of naklitin, which is above 10 tefachim, is only a psul derabanan. One can say that that establishes the pattern that all the two negative factors are only a psul derabanan, but it's not mukhruch to say that. It could be that not all the two negative factors are created equal, and some of them are actually more deadly, specifically concerning kviut, that might impact, let's say, maybe a kinofes, that even if it's under 10 tefachim, might actually be possible in a Torah, and maybe height together with a gag of a tefach, maybe also theoretically could be possible in a Torah. This is a discussion by the Achron. So now Tosfos has the following point. Up until now he was assuming, and this is indeed the psak of most Rishonim, and this is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, in the first Lashon, which is recorded on Yud Amud Beis, again, who stated that a regular kila that is at least a tefach wide may be slept in if it's under 10 tefachim, and may not be slept in if it's over 10 tefachim, but did not comment on a kilas chasanim where you don't have a tefach on top. And the second Lashon of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, who only commented on Akilas Chasanim, where you do not have a tefach on top, that even if it's above 10 tefachim, you can sleep in such Akilas Chasanim. And he did not comment on the regular kila, which is a tefach white on top, concerning the distinction of above 10 tefachim and less than 10 tefachim. So Tosfos up until now was assuming that those two Lashonos are merely talking about different cases, but they are not disputing each other. What the Gemara sometimes calls Mara Machado, Mara Machado Velo Pligi. Except here it's the same Mar, the same person that said different things, but they're not arguing with each other, just giving different examples of the extent of things that are mutter to sleep in the sukkah. A regular kila, even if it's a tefach wide, provided it's under 10 tefachim, and a kilas chasanim, which is not a tefach wide on top, even if it is above 10 tefachim. And that's why Taisus took the liberty of pointing out that the factor of kvius, sometimes creates chumros derabanan, where even if the particular kind of oil structure would be mutter to sleep in min haTorah underneath the schach, but nonetheless it's also derabanan. So he brought proofs both according to the first lashon of Rav Yehuda Mishmuel and according to the second lashon of Rav Yehuda Mishmuel, assuming that they're not arguing. So now Tos presents the possibility that there actually is a machlokis, and exactly what that machlokis is. Three lines in the bottom of the Tos, in the middle of the line. Inami bahachi pligi hanach trei lishni. Alternatively, in this very point, these two versions of Rav Yehuda Mishmuel are arguing. What very point? The point being as to whether Akilas Chasanim, which is above ten tefachim, may be slept in. Because Tosis had said that we were medayek from the second lashon that permanence is a factor for stringency. Because we see concerning naklitin that since it is at least semi-permanent, so there, the Braisa ban sleeping in if it's above 10 tefachim. And that is not the case concerning Akilas Chasanim, where it also doesn't have a width of a tefach on top. And there we allow sleeping it even if it's above 10 tefachim. So why the distinction? So Tosfos pointed out, because permanence makes it worse. And that was in the context that Tosfos was quoting earlier. The same is true concerning Kinofes, and as discussed earlier. So now Tosfos is saying that maybe that idea that he just quoted, that according to the second Lashon, that Akilas Chasanin is mutter, even if it's higher than 10 tefachim, because it's not permanent, maybe that is the subject of debate between the two versions of Yehuda Mishmur. That the first version, who never quoted the heter, that you're allowed to sleep in Akilas Chasanin, again, that does not have a gag on top, if it's above 10 tefachim, and that Lashon only quoted a heter of sleeping in a regular kila that it has a width of a gag, if it's under 10 tefachim. So maybe that distinction of over 10 tefachim and under 10 tefachim would apply regardless of whether it has a gag or not. And the fact that it does not have a gag of a tefach would not make it more lenient to allow you to sleep in it even over 10 tefachim. So that Tosfos says, indeed, might be a point of debate. That maybe the first Lashon rejects that kula of Akilas Chasanim that doesn't have a width of a tefach if it's higher than 10 tefachim being able to sleep in it. And the Svara seemingly would be that the first Lashon holds that height of 10 tefachim is a killer. Not like we said before that you need a tartil reisa. If you have height over 10 tefachim, it's always going to ban it because that factor alone would be a sufficient factor to make it similar enough, perhaps on a rabbinic level, to be like an ohel and therefore osir, regardless of whether it's permanent and regardless of whether it has a width of a tefach. And it's that point that the second Lashon comes to dispute and says, no, that you need tartil reisa. That height alone is not enough to make it similar to an ohel. So now Tosfos proves the point that if you're already going to say that there's a debate going on between these two versions, these two Lashonos of Rav Yehuda Mishmuel, that has to be about that. That concept that was developed by the second Lashon, namely that Akilas Chasanim, we're just going to call it Akilas Chasanim and not constantly repeat that it's less than a tefach. We'll say Akilas Chasanim for short. That halacha that the second Lashon developed, that Akilas Chasanim can be slept in regardless of its height, even if it's over 10 tefachim, that's the point of the debate. That the first Lashon, who didn't discuss that, actually argues. What's the other possibility that they're debating? Or perhaps they're debating two points? Well, the second Lashon didn't discuss the leniency of being able to sleep in a regular kila that is a tefach wide on top, at least, if it's under 10 tefachim. It only discussed the kula of sleeping in a kilas chasanim, which doesn't have a tefach, even if it's over 10 tefachim. So maybe the second Lashon holds, concerning a regular kila, that is always usher to sleep in, similar to kinoifes, that kinoifes that has a tefach wide is usher, as we saw earlier from the diuk and the brisa, regardless of whether it's below 10 tefachim or over 10 tefachim, it's still usher. So maybe the second Lashon argues on that point, even concerning kila, that maybe the second Lashon holds that kila follows that same halacha, because it has a width of a gag, to conceptualize a bit. That a gag, that factor, is so similar to ohel, at least on a rabbinic level, that's enough, even a chada l'reisa, to make it aser. The Tosfos says that can't be. Everyone has to agree that a gag alone is not enough to make it aser. You need some other factor, whether it's kvius, or whether it's the height of 10 tefachim. Even the second Lashon will have to concede that that's true. Why? Tosfos at the end of the third line up from the bottom toward the end. Val karchach baha pligi Hanach Trei Lishni, that the machlokes between these two versions of Rav Yehuda Mishmuel, if they are arguing, Tosfos is not saying they're definitely arguing. The first approach till now was that maybe they're agreeing. But if they are arguing, they're arguing about that point, namely about Akilas Chasanim that doesn't have a tefach on top, whether it's kosher to sleep in, even if it's above 10 tefachim. Delo efsher lemeimer de pligi b'yesh lo gag. Because it's impossible to say that they're arguing in a case where there is a gag, what we call the regular kila, the eina gavoha yud, and it's not taller than 10 tefachim. Dila lishna basra usr, that according to the second version of Rav Yoram Shmuel, that is usr, because it didn't mention the kula of being able to sleep in it if it's under 10 tefachim, unlike the first lashon that did mention that kula. That can't be that they're arguing about that point. Under 10 tefachim, if it's not permanent, like a kinaifes, it's for sure mutter, even though it has a gag of a tefach. How is Tos so confident of that? Maybe it is a machlokis. So Tos now proves it. Daha behedja b'gemara, since explicitly it is stated in the Gemara, Tirgema Shmuel emasnisin dahacha b'gavoa yud. Shmuel, the same Shmuel that was quoted by his faithful Talmud of Yehuda, is quoted in the Gemara here as interpreting the Mishnah, the words of Tosus literally say, the Mishnah that is here, b'gavoa yud, that it's only a case of where it's 10 tefachim tall. What is Tosus referring to? So in the margin of many of the newer Gemaras, they point out that Tosus perhaps should say, lemasnisin dehayoshen, the Mishnah of the second parak. That indeed is what is explicitly stated by the Tosus HaRosh. The Rashash has a similar emendation with the same effect. If you want to preserve the original Girsa, so he's saying, lemasnisin dehacha, because in our Gemara on Yudam Ebeiz, that Mishnah was referenced. What is that Mishnah? The beginning of the second parak teaches us, it's quoted right here in the middle of our Amud, that someone who sleeps under a bed in the sukkah, he has not fulfilled his obligation. And the Gemara quoted the statement of Shmuel, that is talking about a mita gevoa asara, where there's a 10 tefach airspace between the bottom of the bed and the floor. So someone who is sleeping under that bed is sleeping in an airspace of 10 tefachim. And therefore he is considered as sleeping under an ohel. And therefore he's not considered as being under the schach, and therefore he's not yotze. So what do you see from that yesod? You see from that idea that you must have 10 tefachim in order for it to be considered an ohel. And there's no way for the second lashon, since that statement of Shmuel, even though it was only quoted here in our Gemara on Yudam Abeis in the context of the first lashon of Rav Yehudam Shmuel, but the Mishnah in the second Perek, the headquarters of that statement, quoted the statement of Shmuel without indicating that it is subject to machlokis between various lashonos of what Shmuel actually said. So the simple implication is that that statement is unanimously held, that Shmuel holds that you need at least 10 tefachim under the bed in order for the person not to be able to be yotze. And hence, there's no way for that lashon to hold that if it's lower than 10 tefachim, it's also considered an ohel. Just to clarify a little further, we saw concerning kinofes that if it's less than 10 tefachim, that it is aser to sleep in that kinofes. That's what the Gemara was medayik from a brisa. But concerning akila, we pointed out that the first lashon of Yonah Mishmol holds that if it's under 10 tefachim, it's okay. And we explained, because there you only have a chadal areyasa. The only thing that's making it similar to the ohel is the fact that it's a tefach wide on top. But since it's less than 10 tefachim, it's not ohel-like, and since it's not kavua, it's not ohel-like. So that idea, as Mefarshim of Tos explained, is also true concerning amita. Because amita is not nailed to the floor of the sukkah. Amita is movable. So it's also considered not permanent. So amita would be directly similar, not like a kinofes, where you have the four beams attached to the four corners of the bed and the sheets spread on top of it, which is kavua. If one attempted to move the canopy on top, so that would cause the bed to move along with it. And someone sleeping in that would still be under the tent, as opposed to a mita, where if you move the bed, then the person will no longer be sleeping under the bed. So presumably in that sense, the kinofos is called kavua, and the mita is the equivalent of being a rai. But since it's not an old kavua, it should be similar to the kila. And what did Shmuel say about that? That you must have at least 10 tefachim tall in order for it to be a problem. Just as the first lashon of Yudam Shmuel says that about a kila, we have Shmuel saying it concerning a mita. And that is something that's absolute. Because that statement of Shmuel, that the bed has to be at least 10 tefachim in order for it to be a psul, that is quoted without debate at the beginning of the second perek, as we mentioned earlier, not subject to the two lashonos of Rav Yehuda and Shmuel. That Shmuel holds, you require at least 10 tefachim to be a problem. So that would be directly parallel to Akila, which is also not permanent. So everyone has to unanimously hold that concerning these non-permanent structures, whether it's the mita because you can move it, or it's the kila because it's set up on these boards attached to the floor and then the bed is going underneath. So there, under 10 tefachim, won't be able to sleep in it. And the fact that it's a tefach wide on top will not be a sufficient reason to ban you from sleeping in it, according to any of the Lashonos. So if they are arguing these two Lashonos, they must be arguing about The kila is chasanim. That's the way you can sleep in it even if it's above 10 tefachim. But the regular kila, even though it's a tefach wide, if it's below 10 tefachim, that has to be unanimous, parallel to the case of the bed. And Shmuel's interpretation, that has to be at least 10 tefachim tall. A quick summary of the Taisis. Taisis' first point is that even though the Gemara bans sleeping in Naklitin, based on the Braisa, if it's above 10 tefachim, and only permits it if it's below 10 tefachim, that din is a din de Rabbanan, because slanty walls are not considered olim in a Torah, as Tosfos quotes in the Gemara at the end of the first perek. Shipui olim, lav koholim. Point number two is to initially assume that Lashonot of Yehuda Meshmuel, the first one that talks about Akila, that you could sleep in it on the 10 tefachim, but not above 10 tefachim, when it has a tefach wide on top. And the second Lashon of Rav Yehuda Meshmuel that talks about Akilas Chasanim, that doesn't have a tefach on top, that you could sleep in even if it's above 10 tefachim, in contrast to Naklitin. So Tosfos originally assumes that it's Mara Machara Lo Pligi, that these two different versions are not arguing with each other, and that indeed is the Psak and Shulchan Aruch. And Tosfos suggests that if they are arguing, they're arguing about the point concerning the Akilas Chasanim, where the first Lashon would hold, that is subject to the same restriction of only being kosher if it's below 10 tefachim and not being kosher if it's above 10 tefachim, the same as if it had a tefach white on top of a regular kila, and only the second lashon allows it even if it's above 10 tefachim. But with a regular kila, that it is mutter if it's below 10 tefachim, that has to be unanimous, and even the second lashon would agree to that in light of the explicit statement of Shmuel that sleeping on the rebed is only a problem if it is 10 tefachim or higher, because the bed is also a case of where it's arai and not kavua, and hence similar to a regular kila. Tais divi maschel maitzi roshe chutz achila, the koire kriyachma. The Gemara records the statement of Rav Tachlifa Baravimi in the name of Shmuel, that someone who is sleeping in a kila without clothing on, and he wants to read kriyachma, so he could stick out his head from the kila, and he could read kriyachma. After some discussion, the Gemara explains that we're dealing with a kila that is less than 10 tefachim, and therefore, it's not really considered like a tent, it's considered like a beged. And therefore, even though there's a halacha, as Rashi quotes, of l'yirav ha'erev is dovar, that you're not allowed to read kriyachma when the mokam ha'erev is megula, or if there's a possibility of a person to see the Mokam Ereva. So by sticking out his head and putting his head in a different place, so there he is able to read Kriyachma because the Ereva is considered Mechusa through the Kila and the eyes are not in a place that are capable of seeing the Ereva. So Taisus just notes as follows. That Shmuel is not concerned about the fact that the heart is, so to speak, able to see the erva, meaning that there's no divider between the heart and the erva. As they point out in parentheses, this is a machlokes in the Gemara in Brochus, and Chavdal Mebeis, and Chofei Mebeis, it's a machlokes between two Tanoim and a Braisa. There's one opinion that the erva has to be machusa, and the eyes shouldn't be in a situation where they're capable of seeing the erva, but the lave is allowed to see the erva, meaning there's no need for a divider between the heart and the mokam erva, there's only a need for a divider between the head and the mokam erva. And there's another opinion, which is actually the accepted opinion, that not only can't the eyes be able to see the erva, you need a divider, but you also need a divider between the lave and the mokam erva. This is the mokor of the proverbial gartel, which the Rishonim already note, that even if you don't have a formal belt, but if you're wearing pants, that also serves as a divider. But if one is wearing a robe and with nothing on underneath, so even though the mokam erva is mechusa and the eyes are not in a position that they're able to see the erva, but since the lave and the mokam erva are not divided, from each other, so that's usher. And that's actually the way we paskin, that you can't have liboy royas erva. The Taisus just notes that Shmuel's view, as quoted by Rav Tachlifa Baravimi, only insisting that the head go out of the kila, which is somewhat similar to a garment in this context, is not requiring that the lave not be able to see the erva, so he's not concerned about liboy royas erva and consistency, again, as the parentheses points out, like the Tanakama in that brisa that's quoted in Brachis that holds it's not a problem. So the Rosh happens to note in Masechta Brachis that notwithstanding the fact that Shmuel is Mekel, but since Abai and Rava and Masechta Brachis go with the other Tana and hold that you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema with a situation of Liba Ros Erba, that you do need some kind of divider. According to that opinion, what would be required for the Kila is not just to stick your head outside of the Kila, but even to stick the upper chest also outside of the Kila, so it should be a situation of Ein Liba Ros Erba.